welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. Mark Levenier, your host for this hour of series. We'll be continuing stories we've been following later in the hour from One Man's Family and yours truly, Johnny Deller. And right now, part 9 of 10 of Adventures by Morse and the story The Cobra King Strikes Back, a syndicated episode from the 16th of June, 1946.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
Deep in the jungles of Cambodia, and high on the top of a hollow mountain, there stands the ruins of an ancient Khmer temple. Within this decaying symbol of the past have lived for generation upon generation the ancient holy priests of the race that once worshipped the precious seven-headed emerald cobra. The race of Khmers is now vanished, but still the priests, hidden away from the world, have carried on. But let Captain Friday tell it.
Yes. Well, the temple of priests and the priesthood were unknown to the world outside until Taquan, a young Khmer priest, a graduate of the University of California, led his good friend Dr. Carter and his party to the stronghold. Taquan wasn't anxious to have my secretary, Patricia, Skip Turner, and myself on the trip, but Dr. Carter insisted, and so we were included. As soon as we arrived here, we began to notice strange, unnatural actions. You noticed it, Professor LeBrun.
Oui, every voice in the night, every shadow upon the wall, every temple passageway was fraught with vague, sinister promises.
Oh, that's right. And then on the second night came the chilling wolf howl, a howl which emanated from human throats. The air was filled with the raw, pungent odor of the wolf pack, slinking human figures, teeth agleam, eyes red with madness, scrambled from the temple passages and fled, frothing and howling to join the leader of the pack.
Dr. Carter and his friends locked themselves in one of the great halls. Suddenly, there was a knock, and student priest Taquan cried out to be allowed to join them. The door was opened, and there lay the young priest torn and bleeding, the victim of human claws and teeth. He was brought into the room, the doors relocked, and then he was bound up as well as possible. And then he whispered out his story of how he had killed Fen Lo, his brother priest.
Taquan, you murdered Fen Lo?
Why do you give evil interpretation to every action, Captain Friday? Murder is an evil word.
Murder is also an evil deed, Taquan.
Then I did not murder Fen Lo. I killed him. But the thing I did was good.
Oh, so you say. But it just happens that the individual is never the final word in such matters.
Please, I have had enough of your Occidental moralizing.
Well, anyway, Chief, that's one worry off our shoulders. Taquan's taking care of one job for us.
If he did kill Fen Lo.
Dr. Carter, make them understand. Their very lives depend on their faith in me now.
You have something to tell them?
I must tell them what has happened. They must understand what goes on here, or they will never leave alive.
Captain Friday, do you mind if we take Taquan on faith for a bit?
Go ahead. We'll hear what he has to say.
Do you hear that?
We not only have heard, but we saw Taquan.
It was best that you did, Dr. Carter. You would not have believed me otherwise.
We understand this madness, Taquan, if that's your story. But tell us, is the whole of the priesthood involved in this disgusting practice?
That is what I have to tell you. I was born here. As a little boy, I spent my time between the temple of the priests and the rice fields below the jungles. My mother was the daughter of the rice fields. My father was a priest.
I see. You were trained in the traditions of the priesthood here in the temple and spent your leisure time with your mother.
When my temple training was complete at the age of 13, I was sent to the padres of the French missions at Saigon. The old men of the temple in those days were far-seeing. They looked into the future.
They were looking forward to the time when the Khmer Empire would again be a power in the world, I suppose.
Yes. They wished me to know the language and the ways of the rest of the world. Fen Lo was sent with me. We were brother priests.
But what has all this to do with our present predicament?
When I was a small boy, Dr. Carter, the priesthood was an honorable body. The priests were brave and strong and wise.
Is that changed now?
All is changed. It is not the same priesthood at all. The wise men have disappeared. The strong have been murdered.
Degeneracy. A case of a very ancient tree decomposing.
No, it is not that. The priesthood is very old. 10, 12, 15 centuries old. Why should it decay in 20 years? No, doctor. It is not a natural decay.
Do you know what is at the bottom of this disintegration, then?
I do. There have been rumors of a mysterious clan in these jungles. A werewolf has always lived somewhere in the shadows. As a child, I have heard vague stories of terrible jungle orgies, human sacrifices on the altar of the Emerald Seven-Headed Cobra, unholy practices.
The Black Mass.
Here in the jungles of Cambodia.
The Black Mass. And all the time that is supposed to have been an evil byproduct of a nerve overly sophisticated civilization.
Hey, I thought you said these Khmers were civilized.
Go on, Takwan. As I get it, this group that participated in this sort of thing had nothing to do with the priesthood as you knew it in your youth.
That is most true. It was hated. The old men did everything in their power to stamp it out.
And while you were away in Saigon and later in the United States, these human wolves in some manner got a foothold in the Temple of Priests. That right?
That is so. I do not know. But they have turned this ancient temple from a place of honorable worship into a house of abominable practices.
Are all the priests contaminated?
All, Captain Friday, all. Those who refuse to run with the pack and join in the orgies have one by one been slain.
You knew this, yet you brought us to this jungle temple?
But I did not know, Captain Friday. I did not know until I came here and saw for myself.
But what's to happen to all of us, Taquan? How are we to get out of here?
That is what I am coming to, Miss Patricia. Fenlo had come ahead with Dr. Carter and had several days with the priest before I arrived with you.
Yes, and I must say Fenlo was a bad host. I saw nothing of him once we reached the temple. I was left entirely to my own devices.
I know. It is sad to relate that Fenlo was not able to resist the evil ones. When I arrived, he was already bound to them.
Fenlo became one of the werewolves?
I cannot believe he did so without protest. But there was one alternative. Join them or die, as the other good priests have died.
And so he preferred to wallow with the living in their depths of depravity.
He would have gone out tonight for the first time to join the pack.
You stopped him?
I urged him not to go. It was useless. He was prepared to go. When the call of the leader of the pack came, he leaped to his feet.
And you tried to prevent him?
I intended to stop him, Captain Friday. But if it was the last thing I should ever do...
Hey, you mean it was Fenlo who ripped you up like this?
It is so.
And after you helped him get away from the ship. What a swell guy.
He was mad. With the madness of the jungle, or he would not have touched me. But he was not yet tainted with the evil of the orgies.
Well, I understand, Takwan. You killed him to save him from defiling himself.
That is true. That is why I killed my friend.
How do you feel?
If I could have some water to drink.
Here, Dr. Carter.
All right, now. Let me lift your head up a bit.
No. Let me sit up by myself. I cannot have any weakness now.
Can you do it alone? Good. Here, drink. Enough?
What do you mean, Taquan? What do you mean you can't have any weakness now?
My strength is all that will bring you out of this jungle alive, Mr. Perry. You have no friends anywhere here but me. If I die here, here you will die also.
You mean we're trapped?
Unless I am able to save you.
You have a way?
I have been lying here, recovering my strength. Now I am ready It is time to act.
Here, Taquan, you're in no shape to move around.
When there is a need, one can do many things.
But what is there to do?
Make haste to travel the way we have come.
You mean through the Hollow Mountain?
There is no other way.
Hey, you mean we gotta leave this room with all them nuts who think they're wolves swarming around?
It is the only way. And now is the time. When tomorrow dawns and they have returned to their normal selves, they will find Fenlow's body and will know that I am against them. Then it will be too late.
You think we have a good chance of getting to the entrance of the Hollow Mountains?
It has been very still for some time now. All of the members are running with the pack. I think we have a good chance.
What do you say, Chief?
Just one thing. Taquan, you're leading us into danger. If I have the slightest feeling that you're purposely leading us into the hands of the pack, I'll shoot you where you stand.
That is your privilege, Captain Friday.
Good. I just wanted you to understand.
Then are we going now?
We should have food.
There is not time. Once we are at the foot of the Hollow Mountain, there will be food. The horseman who brought us here will be waiting.
But won't there be danger from them?
No. They know nothing of the priesthood or its practices. They know me for a priest. I will do my bidding.
Then the quicker we act, the better.
What about Celia? She's dropped off to sleep here on the rug.
Sure exhaustion.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't waken her. I'll carry her.
We're going to need all hands if we run into a fight.
Plenty of time to wake her up if we run into danger.
You stood up marvelously well, Patricia.
Oh, but would I give worlds for someone to carry me?
Please hurry. There's great danger. Silence is most necessary.
Well, I'll go help Professor LeBrun with the door.
While they're getting ready, let me talk for a moment. Dr. Carter, you and I'll go first with Taquan. You can give him an arm if he feels weak. Next, Patricia, you follow with Perry and Celia.
Yes, boss.
You, Professor LeBrun, bring up the rear with Skip.
Very well.
All right, then. Open the door. Open the door slowly.
Nothing outside, Captain.
Good. Then let's move along.
Down the corridor to the left, eh, Taquan?
Yes.
The whole place reeks with that wolfish smell.
At the end of the corridor, we come out upon a great open court. Take the stairway downward at the left.
I remember. Anyone see a lurking shadow, let me know. Don't shoot until we're attacked.
No, that would be fatal. Silence is our only hope.
Here's the stairs. Now we begin the descent. All right behind?
Yes, we're close behind. Celia hasn't opened her eyes since Perry picked her up.
Sleeping like a babe.
Oh, I could die when I think about us having to climb down all those suspension ladders. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
What a mess this expedition's turned out.
Well, I suppose we should feel lucky to get out of here with our lives. Be careful, Perry. Both of you would be killed if you fell down this long stairway with Celia in your arms.
Mind keeping your hand on my arm to steady me?
Yeah.
There, that's fine.
Dr. Carter's a good sport, isn't he? Here he's come all the way from San Francisco, and now, just when he's on the point of finding something, he has to leave.
Not a peep out of him.
The expedition must have cost him a lot, too.
Well, that doesn't hurt him half as much as the fact that he's getting along in years. This is probably his last opportunity of doing research work in Cambodia.
Oh, it's a shame.
Be careful at the bottom of these stairs. Hug the wall. Remember, this path leads along a bottomless chasm.
Well, anyway, it's dark. I couldn't do this if I could see where I was walking.
Probably won't light the torches until we start down the ladders.
Wouldn't it be perfectly ghastly if we should meet some of those animal people on this narrow path?
We'd be in plenty of trouble. Are Professor LeBrun and Skip Turner right behind us?
Well, I can't see anything in the dark. You behind us, Professor? Professor LeBrun! Skip!
It's queer.
They don't answer.
You don't suppose those wolfmen are slipping up on us from the rear?
Skip! Professor, answer me! Oh, we've lost them. We've lost them.
Led by the Khmer student, Taquan, the Dr. Carter party is slipping swiftly and silently from the Temple of Priests, down the stairway under the monastery, and along the narrow precipice in the Hollow Mountain beneath. Presently, They must descend tier after tier of suspension ladders and bridges to get to the valley level below. Just now, they are groping in the darkness on the narrow pathway along the bottomless chasm. Patricia calls softly over her shoulder.
Professor Lebrun, are you right behind us?
What's the matter? Why don't they answer?
Skip Turner. Professor Lebrun!
Quiet, Patricia. You mustn't shout.
Oh, Professor. Why didn't you answer me? You skipped there?
Why, sure. We waited back around the corner to see if we was being followed.
Oh, you frightened us. Stay close behind.
Right behind you, Patricia. We'd better go ahead.
Sure. We're stepping on your heels. Hey, if you get tired, Perry, I'll take Seedy and you can come back here.
Getting along nicely for the present.
You want to hang on to a good thing while you got it, huh? I don't blame you.
You folks are making too much noise back there.
Hey, teacher. This here expedition's kind of a frost for you, ain't it?
Frost? Well, now, Skip, I wouldn't exactly put it that way.
Yeah, I know, Professor Lebrun, but just the same, you and Dr. Carter ain't seen nothing you come to see.
Skip, we've seen many, many things. We've witnessed one of the greatest tragedies in all history.
Yeah?
I've seen a prophecy defeated. I've seen what promised to be a great nation die unborn. I've seen men turned into devils.
Hey, what you talking about, Professor?
You have seen the same things, too, but you haven't recognized them as such.
Yeah? I don't get it.
Does that mean you'd like an explanation?
Why, sure. No, I think you and Dr. Carter have been stung on this trip.
You recall the story of the seven-headed cobra of Tafram?
You mean the emerald idol on a base of gold?
Yes. And you recall the prophecy that declared the Khmer kingdom would be reestablished when it came again to life?
Sure, I remember.
I have seen that emerald Tafram cobra. It is recovered and is now in the vaults of the temple above us.
Yeah? And does that mean there's going to be a grand rush of people into the jungle to rebuild this kingdom? Like what the prophet said?
No. That is why Dr. Carter says we have lived to see a prophecy defeated. The priests of Khmer have broken faith. They have become worse than devil worshippers. With the exception of Takwan, there is not a single worthy leader among them.
Oh, well, then the whole thing's going to flop, huh?
The great nation that was to be is this very moment dying unborn. And the men who were to lead the Khmers into this vast jungle to rebuild the old civilization are running in packs, howling like wolves, the slaves of their own passions. They've made devils out of themselves. And the new kingdom of Khmer is lost.
Oh, golly, Captain Friday, he'll be tickled pink to hear that. Hey, if you're sure about that, well, then his job up here is done.
Yes, he can return to Saigon and tell the French government that there will not be an uprising among the people of Cambodia during our lives, nor during the lives of our children. It'll take generations to build a new Khmer priesthood out of the vile filth that now occupies the temple of the priests.
Oh, that's great. And with Fenlo dead, well, we kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, it is the end of a dream. Poor Takwan. What a tragic day for him. His friend dead at his own hands. His hopes of leading his people out of slavery and back into the promised land gone forever. Poor chap.
Yeah, but still, I don't see what Dr. Carter got out of this trip. That is, except seeing that cockeyed emerald cobra for a minute.
Skip, out of this experience, Dr. Carter will be able to add a new chapter to the history of the East.
Skip, where are you?
Oh, right here, Patricia.
Oh, well, Captain Friday says we're almost to the place where we start down the ladders. Is everything all right?
Yeah, tell him okay.
Oh, what was that?
They're on our trail. Dr. Carter, the werewolves are after us. Get on the ladders, quick.
Can they follow us down the ladders?
They not only can, but will.
Hurry, Mills. Put down the girl. Here we are at the ladders. We'll have to light a torch to see what we're doing.
A misstep now means death.
Here, I have a torch lighted. Now then, Takwan, you know the way. You first.
I would rather stay behind where the attack is to be.
Takwan, you said yourself that our lives depended upon your safety. It's your duty.
I bow to your will.
Good. Easy now. All right?
I am on the ladder.
All right, Patricia. You next.
All right. I'm afraid.
Quickly, quickly. Taquan will steady you.
Oh, boss.
Steady, Patricia. Grit your teeth.
Oh, God. It's silly of me. Catch me if I fall, Taquan.
Oh, do not be afraid, Miss Patricia.
But there.
Are you all right?
Well, don't worry about me.
Be quick, then. Perry, is Celia awake?
No. Still out like she was drugged.
Well, never mind. Give it to me. Now, down on the ladder with you.
Yeah.
Now, take her in your arms.
Down a little more. Okay. Black as night here on the ladder.
You got her?
Okay, Captain Friday.
All right. Move down the ladder with Takwan. All right, Professor. You're next.
Hadn't I better wait?
Are you going to argue, too?
Well, have it your own way.
Yeah, all right, come, Johnny.
Right here, Professor.
Now you, Dr. Carter.
You and Skip first.
Do what I tell you, Doctor.
I'm sorry, Captain, but I'm the head of this expedition. You will please descend.
Hey, for crying out loud, get a move on. Listen at him coming up yonder.
This is against my will.
Now then, follow the captain, Skip.
That's okay by me.
Hi there, Doctor. Harry, the entire pack is descending on us.
I'm coming now. Steady my foot on the ladder, Skip.
Yeah, careful. There you are. Now you're all set. Hey, I got a notion to take a pot shot up the path.
Don't you dare, Skip. They can't know how far ahead we are. A shot would give us away.
Oh, I suppose you're right.
The best thing is to get down the ladder as fast as possible. We don't want to lose track of the others.
Well, I'm doing my darndest. I ain't much shakes at going down a ladder backwards. It's too bad we can't get a gang of them on one of the ladders and cut it loose. Send about a dozen head first down the cliff.
That is our final hope, Mr. Skip.
You hear, Talquan? I thought you'd be way down the ladder with Perry and the girls.
I waited. My place is with the fighters.
Hey, I'm getting kinks in my legs. I can't keep up this pace on a ladder.
None of you can. On the other hand, those who pursue us are as agile as monkeys. It is no use trying to escape them. Our one hope is to select a suitable place and stand and fight.
Will they have weapons?
Here, knives. Much more effective weapons in hand-to-hand fighting than guns.
Well, I'll take my chances with a gun.
They'll be down on us so fast, you won't have an opportunity for more than one shot at these. Already, they are on the ladders.
They're gaining on us. Hello, Chief. What's a good word?
We've got to make a stand, Dr. Carter. The girls can't go much further.
I was afraid so.
Hey, couldn't we tear loose one of the ladders above? That will stop them.
As easily dislodge the mountain itself. These ladders are built on logs embedded in the granite walls of the mountain.
Well, the ladder is only wide enough for two at a time. We can kill them as fast as they come.
Oh, do not be optimistic, Captain. They do not climb down the ladder. They swarm.
It's useless, Patricia. I can't carry Celia any further.
Boss.
Not so loud, Patricia. We're just behind you.
Boss, we can't go on. Perry and I are finished.
Well, that settles it. We'll fight here.
The time has come, then.
Perry, take off your belt. Here's mine. Strap Celia to the ladder. We'll need every man for the fight.
Okay. Patricia, can you hold her against the ladder a moment?
Yes, I think so.
There. Put the strap around under her arms, and you can kind of hold her. That'll ease the strain.
Oh, boss, I'm so tired. I could just let go and tumble down.
Stop that kind of talk.
I wonder how far it is.
Oh, we can't be halfway down. It must be a couple of thousand feet.
Well, if one was to fall, he'd roll clear to the bottom, I suppose.
Yes, and remember, there's a bottomless chasm at the foot of the ladders. You'd go out of existence forever.
Yeah. Oh, but they're getting close.
Got your gun?
Yes, of course.
Now listen, Patricia. The worst comes to the worst. Save two cartridges.
Oh, Perry.
Now don't let yourselves be taken by those priests.
Oh, it's horrible.
I promise.
Yes, I promise.
Perry, when you get Celia tied, come up the ladder beside Skip.
I'm right with you.
All right. Is everyone in position? Now, Dr. Carter and myself in front. The next down, Taquan and Professor Lebrun. Third row, Skip and Perry.
Oh, look here, Captain. What is this? The last great roll call?
Hey, looky, teacher. If you're planning to become an angel, you better start growing your wings in a hurry. You're going to need them if you leave the ladder suddenly.
Hey, they're certainly taking their time in getting here. I thought they were right on top of us.
It is the hollow echo that makes them seem so close.
Well, bring them on and get it over with.
Do not fret, my friend. They will be over only too soon.
One last word. No one is to fire until I give the word. We can't take a chance of missing. When we know exactly where they are, Dr. Carter and I will fire. Two shots apiece. We'll drop down against the ladder and Taquan and the professor will fire. They'll hug the ladder and Perry and Skip will fire two shots, and that'll leave us plenty of cartridges for hand-to-hand work. You understand?
Gotcha, Chief.
Okay. And Patricia?
Yes, boss.
I'm sorry I haven't time to come down to you. Don't lose your nerve.
All right. Good luck, boss.
Okay. Here they come. Are you ready, Doctor?
Ready, Captain.
Wasn't so blasted dark. Well, there they are. Let them have it. Down, Doctor, down.
Have at them, Duck One, old son.
Out of the way, you guys. Give it to him, Perry.
You bet.
We've driven them off. They're running back up the ladder.
Oh, I see, Captain. There's a fight going on up ahead. Who is it?
I hear it. And I can't see. Is that you, Skip?
No.
Here I am. You still here, Perry?
Right alongside.
Where's Taquan?
Taquan! Taquan!
Doesn't answer.
Where's Dr. Carter?
Doctor! Doctor!
Hey, maybe they're both in it.
Captain, give me a hand. Quick!
The doctor, grab him! It's too late.
Hey, you mean Taquan and Dr. Carter was thrown off that ladder?
Yes. They're both gone.
I dived 1,000 feet into that black hole.
Dr. Howard Carter has led his final expedition into the mysteries of the past. He came into Cambodia in defiance of a fate that overwhelmed and destroyed 30 million citizens of the ancient Khmer Kingdom. But he was not strong enough. And like the 30 millions, he too passes into oblivion. And with him went the only honorable priest of the Cambodian jungle, Taquan. You have just heard the 9th episode of The Cobra King Strikes Back. The 10th and final episode, entitled The Amazing End of an Expedition, comes to you next week at this same time. You are listening to Adventures by Morse.
Adventures by Morse, on Tuned to Yesterday, part 9 of a 10-part series of The Cobra King Strikes Back, from June 16, 1946, a syndicated broadcast. And the series was first created and released in 1944 with the object of being able to play one of the installments of an either 10 or 3-part story alternately, week after week, for an entire year. For instance, following The Cobra King Strikes Back, a 3-part story would be introduced before going back to another 10-parter. We'll be bringing you the conclusion of The Cobra King Strikes Back next week at about the same time. This is an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for One Man's Family, taking from the book of Teddy, book 78, chapter 25. That's the format, from NBC, from October 6th, 1950.
One Man's Family, brought to you, transcribed every weekday night at this time, by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer and many other fine, dependable pharmaceutical products. Overheard between Clifford, Henry, and Jack in the library.
Well, Jack, I think the honeymooners are going to make it this time. There's a cab out in front and their bags are in it.
Yeah, I saw it. You pretty excited, Dad?
I'm breaking all precedent, Jack. When Elwood and Teddy come downstairs, I'm actually going to throw a handful of rice to celebrate the occasion.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it is with the barbers today. Chapter 25, Book 78. It is after breakfast now in Seacliff, San Francisco, and Elwood Giddings and his bride, Teddy Barber Giddings, who have been kept apart by an unkind fate ever since their wedding day before yesterday, are leaving for the Mark Hopkins Hotel this morning. Right now, Elwood in Claudia's old room and Teddy in her room at the top of the house are getting ready to come downstairs. In the Barber Library, Jack has just dropped in from his house next door. His brother Clifford is saying,
"Well, Jack, they may make it this time. There's a cab out in front and their bags are in it. The honeymoon is on."
"Honey! Oh, honey!"
Is Dad pretty excited?
Oh, he's in it dizzy. You'd think it was his wedding trip.
"Honey!"
Mrs. Kettleman won't give him any rice. Wild rice is all she's got in the kitchen. It's too expensive to throw around.
"Hey, I got some rice."
"What?"
"Pocketful." "Hey, Dan!"
"Honey!" "Huh? Oh, who's that?" "Oh, Jack."
"Hey, come on in."
"Yes, yes. Why, you'd think a cook would have something besides wild rice in the house."
"I thought you disapproved of the custom, Dan."
"Well, Elwood and Teddy have had so little ceremony and excitement so far, I think we..."
"Well, here, hold out your hand."
"Huh? Oh, ho, 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 ho. Now, be careful now. Now, don't dribble it on the floor." "Yes? You came prepared, did you, Jack?"
"That ain't the half of it. Betty and my little girls are out in front with Hazel's kids. It's going to rain rice out there."
"Ridiculous custom, but it'll give things an air of festivity."
"Hey, Jack, let me have some."
"Sure."
"You got plenty?"
"Sharon Ann put it in my pocket with a flour scoop."
"Yeah, I'm so glad that Teddy got a special leave, Jack."
"Yeah, so I heard."
"Yes."
"Henry, what were you screaming to me about?"
"Why didn't you answer, Fanny?"
"I was helping Teddy pack." "Good morning, Jack."
"Morning, Mom."
"What was it you wanted, Henry?"
"Oh, never mind now, but Mrs. Kettleman, in my own kitchen, wouldn't give me any rice, Fanny. All we have is wild rice.
Henry, you aren't going to throw rice at the bride and groom.
Yes, sir. Oh,
for goodness sakes. I don't know what's got into your father, boys. Teddy's marriage has made him positively giddy.
Now, Fanny, we must make a big thing out of this departure. Make them feel that they're really married. Yes, all the delays have made the whole thing anticlimactic. We must do what we can to lift it up.
If you get rice all over the house, there'll be trouble.
Quiet. Are they coming?
Good morning.
Oh, hi, Hazel.
Oh, hi.
Where's Daniel?
Oh, he stopped outside to talk to Betty and the children, Father. He'll be along.
Let's stand over here and be very quiet. We're going to sing, you know. Fanny, when they come downstairs, here comes the bride.
Well, what's this conspiratorial little group?
Hi, Paul. You want a fistful of rice?
Yeah, we're trying to pump this up into a festive occasion.
No rice, thanks, Jack. The father of the bride, in this case, is a detached observer.
Oh, Teddy! Teddy! Mrs. Barber, is Teddy down there?
She's coming, Elwood.
I'm beginning to get a little nervous for some reason.
That's strange. She'll be right down, Elwood. My, how elegant you look.
Yes, my blue serge. You like it?
Yes, very sharp.
Yes, sir. You look like a sure enough bridegroom, Elwood, all done up in a nice new set of threads like that.
Hey, here she comes.
Oh,
Teddy, you look wonderful. Yes. Where's Paul?
Here I am, honey.
Oh, Paul.
Hey, how about a song right here?
Come on.
Here comes a bride.
Oh.
All right, Teddy, let's go. Come on, Teddy. Come on, Mrs. Giddings.
Come on, everybody. I'll get the rice ready. Goodbye, everybody.
Yes, come on, everybody.
Phone's ringing.
You're okay, I'll get it.
Hello? Yes. Oh, who's this calling, please? Oh, just a second, Major. Hold on. Hello? Hello, Major. I'm sorry. She just left. What's that? Oh, well, if it's that important. Yes, the Mark Hopkins Hotel. She'll be registered as Mrs. Elwood Giddings. Yes, that's right. The Mark Hopkins Hotel, Mrs. Elwood
Teddy. Come on in.
Well, I'm sure there was a phone ringing in here, Elwood.
I'll see. Hey, here, my dear. Give this to the boy. Yeah. I'll see if I can find out who was on the phone. Hello, operator. This is Dr. Giddings. Yes, we just came down the corridor from the elevator. We thought our phone would... Oh, I see. Well, anyhow, we're here now. Yes, very nice, too. Yeah, we like it very much. Yes, all right.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Yeah, operator, what time does the top of the mark open?
Elwood, it's open practically all the time.
Oh, well, never mind, operator. Here, Teddy, let me take your coat.
Oh, it's all right. I've got it.
Did you have enough money for the boy?
Oh, I added a little, Elwood, I think, at a hotel.
Hey,
like this.
Look at the flowers.
What? Oh, yes.
Flowers. Well, isn't that thoughtful? I wonder who sent them. I always like chrysanthemums.
Oh, isn't that odd, and I never have. They always remind me of football helmets.
Well, I'll send you roses on the many, many anniversaries of this wonderful day, Teddy. Oh, look, here's the card. Well, from the management.
Well, I imagine they do that for everybody, Elwood.
No, this is special. See, it says, to Dr. and Mrs. Elwood Giddings with best wishes. They know this is our honeymoon. I had to cancel the reservation so many times they got to know about us. Hey, look at the rice on the floor.
I never knew Father Barber to carry on that way.
Well, after all the delays and everything, he got so worked up about the only thing left to do is to throw some rice at us.
You've still got some in your hair.
Am I? Well, so have you.
Oh, dear.
I'll be proud of it. Gee, I am. When I crossed that lobby with you on my arm, well, I never walked so proudly into a hotel lobby in my life, Teddy. I never signed my name with such pride, either. Dr. and Mrs. Elwood Giddings.
It's a lovely view here, Elwood, from this window.
Yes, it is, isn't it? I asked Paul what to do about that, you know.
About what? The view?
Oh, no. No, about signing the register. Whether it should be Elwood Giddings and wife or Dr. and Mrs. Elwood Giddings. He thought the latter had more dignity.
Mm-hmm.
You hated terribly to leave Paul, didn't you?
Let's not talk about that, Elwood.
I only wanted to say I'll try to be a good husband to you, as Paul has been a father. Only I'm not an adopted husband. I'm one up on him there. I'm your real husband, Teddy.
Yes, Elwood. Let's go to the top of the mark and see the view from there.
Oh, we want to rush right out of our room as soon as we get in it? Oh,
I don't mean necessarily right this minute, but pretty soon, shall we, Elwood?
Before dinner, huh?
Yes, sir. Let's go for a long walk, and I'll show you some of the famous old homes in the cathedral.
Okay. Work up an appetite for dinner, huh? Yes, yes. Did you hear me say yes, yes? Yeah, I've been with your grandfather so much lately, I'm picking up some of his mannerisms. Matter of fact, ever since I got to San Francisco, I spent more time with my bride's grandfather than I have with my bride. Oh, Teddy, I can't tell you what it means to me to be alone at last.
Yes. Yes, Elwood.
If you weren't still in the Army, everything would be perfect, wouldn't it? Of course, it's pretty near perfect right now, but I mean, you having to rush off to duty right after the wedding. Gosh, that hit me harder than you know. Well, do you realize, Teddy, I've only really kissed you on the lips once since we were married, and that was in front of the Justice of the Peace.
It's such a lovely day, we really ought to go out for a little while, Elwood.
What? Oh, say, you know, I've been meaning to ask you, Teddy, do you have a little touch of claustrophobia?
Well, of course not. Why?
Well, I don't know. Rooms seem to make you feel cooped up. Well, if you want to go for a walk, we can, only, well, it won't be quite the way I pictured it. I thought when the door finally closed and the bride and groom, and they were alone, they swept into each other's arms, and I guess I've seen too many movies. Gee, it startled me. I'll get it. Yes? Teddy Barber? Oh, yes. She's Mrs. Giddings now, though. Yeah, I'll call her. Teddy.
Yes?
Yeah, for you.
Hello? Oh, yes, Major. Oh, no, that's all right. Oh, yes, of course, sir. Oh, no, I realize you need surgical nurses.
Oh, Teddy.
The Jeep? Yes, sir. Yes, sir, downstairs in 15 minutes. I will, sir. Thank you. Elwood. Oh, Elwood.
Yes, Teddy?
I volunteered for something a week ago when I first got home, and it's come about. Oh, Elwood, it's only for 10 days. I'm flying to Korea this noon. It's a wonderful chance for me to really help. Oh, Elwood, please say it. You surely don't mind.
Here's the family again.
Well, Captain, will you send a boy up here for our bags, please? Room 414.
Tell them to hurry, Elwood.
Yes, Captain, I know we just checked in, but now we're checking out. Yeah, my wife is in the Army, yes. And tell the boy to hurry, please. She hasn't much time.
One Man's Family on Tuned to Yesterday from October 6th, 1950 on NBC. We close this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and part 4 of 5 of the Alvin Summers Matter from October 27th, 1955 on CBS.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, remember me, sweetheart?
Johnny, I didn't think...
I'm the guy you were making the big pitch for. Dancing, moonlight on the beach, the complete routine. Oh, I gotta hand it to you, baby. That was real nice acting.
No, it wasn't acting, Johnny. I meant it, all of it.
Oh, sure, Gloria, sure. That's why I catch you here and searching my room. That's all part of the big romance, huh?
I can explain.
And that's just what you're gonna do. Hey, look, Gloria, one guy has already wound up dead on this deal. I've got a strong hunch I'm number 2 man on the list. And this baby I do not want.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Santo Tomas, Mexico. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. to the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of additional expenses during my investigation of the Alvin Summers embezzlement of $75,000. Item 9, $17.60, business entertainment for one Gloria Harris. Believe it or not, I wasn't going to put that item on the account because I figured it might just possibly be a private romance. But when I caught Gloria searching my hotel room, I knew she tied into the deal somehow, that she could give me information on Summers' whereabouts.
Johnny, please.
Oh, no, you're not leaving, Gloria, not yet.
I'm not trying to get away. Oh, what's the use? You'd never believe me.
Why should I? You lied to me.
I lied to you once. Only once. When I told you I'm here on a vacation. I'm not.
Surprised.
The truth is, I'm stranded down here.
Stranded? Oh, sure. That's why you're staying at the Playa del Mar, the most expensive hotel in town.
I don't mean no money. I mean no passport.
Oh.
It's true. You got a cigarette, Johnny?
Yeah, here.
Thanks. Yeah. I've been stuck in this ratty town for 4 months now. Hoping every day that I could figure out some way or find somebody to help me get back to the States.
How come you picked this town, assuming I believe you?
Because I heard that fugitives from the States sometimes came here. I've been drifting around for a year from place to place. I guess I thought my luck would change here, but it hasn't.
How'd you lose your passport in the first place?
I'll tell you if you really want to know, Johnny. Personally, I'd rather skip it. It's a long story, not a very pretty one. And it's all in the past. Let's just say I made a mistake about a guy.
Okay, Gloria, okay. But there's one little item you haven't told me. Why you were searching my room just now.
Because I was trying to find out something about you, Johnny. The reason why you're down here.
Why?
So maybe I could make a deal with you.
Deal?
You help me get a passport. And I'll help you.
How can you help me?
You're looking for Alvin Summers, aren't you?
Oh, am I?
6 months ago, he embezzled $75,000 up in the States and took off.
Go on.
You came down here to find him. You're an insurance investigator.
Keep talking.
That's all. That's it.
Now maybe you wouldn't mind telling me how you know all of... Oh, sure. That report in my suitcase.
And the picture. Alvin Summers. I know him. I can help you, Johnny.
Where is he?
First, I've got to know if you'll help me.
The passport?
The passport.
Well, what do you expect me to do about that?
In your business, Johnny, you must meet a lot of people, all kinds. Maybe one of them has an extra passport or two for a price, maybe.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
That the best you can say?
That's the best. Take it or leave it.
All right, I'll take it. I haven't any choice.
Now, about Alvin Summers.
I'll take you there, to Summers' place.
Where is it?
Down the beach, about a mile below town. Then into the jungle a little way.
How come you know where it is?
I met Alvin Summers a couple of months ago.
Here in Santo Tomas?
Yeah. I went there once for dinner.
Okay, you take me there, Gloria.
First, I'd better go up to the hotel and change. The country's pretty rough on clothes.
Okay, I'll meet you at your hotel in half an hour.
Johnny.
Hmm?
I only lied to you about one thing. The reason I was down here. The rest of it I meant. Last night, on the terrace and on the beach. I meant all of it. Really, Johnny. And I mean this.
You know, I'm kind of glad you told me that. See you in half an hour. I stayed there a while after she left, going over the case in my mind. Maybe she was telling me the truth. But whether she was or not, I had to follow up any lead I could find because I was getting nowhere the way things were. Half an hour later, as I was starting out of my room to go pick her up, my phone rang. It was a long-distance call from the States.
Fred Wilkins at Northeastern Fidelity, Johnny.
Hi, Fred.
Well, how's the fishing down there?
Fishing? A matter of fact, it hasn't been so good so far, Fred.
Ah, that's too bad, but I'll bet the swimming is all right, huh?
Whoa there, what's eating you?
I didn't send you down there for a vacation.
Well, you got a great sense of humor. You should see this place vacation.
Then what have you been doing down there?
Well, what do you think I've been doing? I've been looking for whoever it was that telephoned you and said he had information on Alvin Summers.
You couldn't have been looking very hard. He called me again this morning.
He what?
That's right, he wondered if I'd sent anyone down there yet.
Hey, look, Fred, this guy is not easy to find, believe me. And I think I know why. Obviously, somebody doesn't want him to talk, and that somebody could be Alvin Summers, about one jump behind him.
Summers, you think he's around there?
Could be. I'm leaving right now to find out. I've got a lead on where he lives. There's somebody at the door. I'll call you when I get anything.
Do that.
Fishing. Oh, Lieutenant Gomez. Well, look, I'm in sort of a hurry right now.
This will not take long.
Okay. What is it, Lieutenant?
Early this morning, one of my men found Senor Kraus in the alley.
How is he feeling?
He had been badly beaten. He would not tell us anything, but it was fairly obvious who had done this to him.
So?
So, the last time we talked, Senor Dollar, I warned you not to attempt to take the law into your own hands.
Now listen, Gomez, if you think I want to take a pistol whipping like he gave me and not do anything about
do
it, you
do not misunderstand. I care nothing about Kraus personally or what happens to him. I'm thinking about something more important.
For instance?
You are looking for Alvin Summers, a man who quite obviously does not want to be found.
So?
So, when you find him, it is quite possible that there will be trouble.
Granted. But let's face a few facts, Lieutenant. You and your boys can't help me. You're in charge of the Santa Tomas Police Force, all two men. And I imagine you've got a few other things on your mind besides an embezzler from the States and an insurance investigator.
That may
well
be true.
So that means I've got to do it on my own.
Very well, Senor Dollar. This morning I attended the funeral of Benito Escanza, who was killed because he had information about Alvin Summers. If you find Summers and take the law into your own hands again, I fear I may have to attend another funeral. Yours.
That's what I liked about Gomez. He was the cheerful type. Well, I picked up Gloria at her hotel and we headed for Summers' place. We walked down the beach about a mile below town. The beach kept narrowing as the jungle crowded closer and closer to the water.
This place is in from the beach a ways. There's a little path pretty soon that leads in. You could walk right by it and never see it. Here it is.
And that's just what we'll do.
Hmm?
Walk right by it. I don't want to lead anyone else here.
There's nobody else on the beach.
I'm not talking about the beach. That's a regular jungle in there. 20 people could be watching us, so we'd never see them.
Oh, I guess so.
Okay. We'll go in here, then work our way back to the path. Brother, this is pretty thick in here.
Yeah. Oh. When you're walking through thick brush like this, you always feel like somebody's watching you. Imagination gets pretty strong sometimes.
I think it's a little more than imagination.
What do you mean?
Stop a minute. Listen.
I don't hear
him.
Johnny.
Yeah, somebody's tailing us again. Look, keep moving straight ahead. I'm going to circle and see if I can intercept him.
All right, but be careful.
Gloria moved on, and I started circling to the right. Every few seconds, I'd stop and listen. Yeah, he was still there. I pegged the direction of the sound and started edging toward it slowly. Then my foot caught on a bar. I scrambled to my feet and kept going in the same direction. There was a small clearing ahead. I reached it, stopped, and listened. Nothing. Whoever I was chasing seemed to know the country better than I did. He disappeared. I caught up with Gloria a couple of hundred yards farther along the trail.
Any luck, Johnny?
No. Whoever it is pretty good at keeping out of sight.
Are you sure it was a person? Might have been some kind of animal.
Yeah, maybe.
You can see a corner of Alvin Summers' hut from here. Past that big tree.
Yeah, come on. And stay behind me.
All right.
If there's any trouble...
You think there will be?
Look, a guy who's this careful about hiding doesn't usually welcome visitors. Quiet now. No sign of life. Keep back against the wall. I'm going to open the door. Okay, Gloria.
Nobody home, huh?
Nobody home. Well, he seems to have a pretty comfortable place here.
You like to live in jungles.
Yeah.
What?
Looks like he hasn't been around for several days.
Oh?
The food in these cupboards, pretty moldy. Yeah, I guess they've cleared out.
They?
Uh-huh. He and whoever was here with him.
What makes you think someone was?
For one thing, two sets of dirty dishes over there.
Maybe he just wasn't neat.
He'd have to have been awfully neat to use two toothbrushes and two kinds of toothpaste, and two people have been eating at this table. See the crumbs?
Maybe there's something around here that could give you a clue to where he might be now.
Maybe. If he's still alive.
What do you mean? You think he isn't?
Oh, I don't know. But if somebody else was living here, too, it could mean he had a partner in this deal. And it's a funny thing about that kind of playmates. Sooner or later, they start quarreling about who's going to hold the marbles. $75,000 worth in this case.
But Johnny, if he is dead, that leaves you nowhere.
Maybe not. Listen.
What?
Yeah. Sounds like our shadow is somewhere outside. Keep talking, Gloria. Normal tone. I'm going out the back way and see if I can spot him.
Why don't you look around the hut, Johnny?
gloria kept up a line of patter while I slipped out the back door and into the brush. I listened.
You want me to do anything?
Nothing but the sound of Gloria's voice.
Johnny?
He had to be somewhere near. But where? I worked my way around to the front of the cabin, still under cover. No sign. I kept on around the other side. Then, as I started to climb over a fallen tree trunk, I saw a shadow out of the corner of my eye.
Hold it. Don't turn around.
The voice was behind me. I could see the rest of the shadow now, a hand with a gun. And I knew it was zeroed in on my backbone.
I said hold it.
I'm holding.
Drop your gun. Kick it backwards, quick.
Hey, look, whoever you are...
Don't turn around.
Okay.
And don't try to move.
Mind telling me...
Keep your eyes straight ahead. Any move at all, it'll be your last.
There'll be the final exciting episode in our story of the Alvin Summers matter tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow. How to find out what you've been looking for the hard way. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of October, 1950 on CBS. And that closes this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to tune in next week at the very same time for the conclusion of the stories we've been following along with. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LePonier. Thanks for listening.